Shadows Literary License podcast episodes. Ben Stokes here, exploring all things Collinsport, Maine, and following the likes of the Collins family and the friends and foes, with your co-hosts Tom Diamond, Jesse Fultz, Mickey Ray, and Keith Chalgo. Collins family, story about blood relations, literally. Hello, everyone. This is Tom Diamond from Literary License Podcast, and we hope you're all doing very well. This is a very, very special tribute that we have today, and we have two special guest stars that are with us to talk about the life of the late Don Briscoe, who on Dark Shadows, as all the fans know, played Chris Jennings, who was the werewolf, Tom Jennings, who was the vampire, the twin brothers, then Tim Shaw in the 1897 segment, and then Chris Collins in Parallel Time. And for us, we have, as I said, two special guest stars. The first is someone you all know and who has contributed a lot to Literary License Podcast during the years, and that's none other than Roger Davis. Roger, get over there.
Yeah.
How are you
right
today?
Here.
Good. How are you today?
Oh, my God. If I were I'm jumping for joy.
Yes, I don't want you to jump for joy too much because then our connection might be affected. But
I'm very happy to be here, and I know that Sean is here,
and I'm going to introduce her. I'm going to introduce her right away. Our other guest is Sean Randall. Sean Randall is someone who Roger happened to bump into by accident, and we're going to talk about, and she's going to talk about that. But Sean is someone who knew Don personally and very graciously agreed to be with us today to talk about her reminiscences of Don. Sean, how are you today?
I'm just fine. Thank you very much.
It's really, really nice.
Here and happy to be participating, happy to be contributing.
How you bumped into Roger and how this last minute guest appearance all came about.
Sure. Well, I don't know if you've all heard about synchronicity, but it exists. It's real. And things that just seem to be accidental aren't always accidental. But a mutual friend of ours, friend of Roger's, friend of mine, Peggy, invited me to her son's recital concert. And Roger was there, and we were going up the stairs, didn't see each other's face, and I'm following him up the staircase. And so we get into the room where the entertainment is, and he turned around and looked at me, and I looked at him. I was like, oh, God, I know that face. And I said, "You're Roger Davis. I knew you as Don Briscoe's friend years ago." And so it was like this moment of recognition and surprise because I knew Roger from being Don's friend all those years ago. And I remembered him. I hadn't seen him in all those years. So anyway, we started reminiscing about Don, and then I was invited here, so I'm very happy to be participating in it. It's great.
So Sean was talking about how she had bumped into you accidentally, Roger, and then you started reminiscing about Don, and it was quite a chance meeting in terms of that. So Sean, I'm going to ask you to talk about how you met Don, and specifically, what were your reminiscences about him? Good, indifferent, or otherwise. And
sure.
I'll let you take it from there.
Okay. So I was a dancer at NBC, dancing on many, many different shows, Dean Martin show, Jerry Lewis show, etc. And I was walking in the hallway one time, and there was Don. And I'm not sure what he was doing there, but he was walking in the hall. We just sort of looked at each other. It was a strange moment of recognition where it was things like, oh, hi, you know, and we started talking and we started dating. So basically, I know him the most in the context of dating him. I don't recall exactly how long that lasted, but we dated for a while he was doing Dark Shadows, and then after he left Dark Shadows. And then our friendship continued into New York. When I moved to New York, he moved to New York, and I saw him there as well. So I have a lot of very nice recollections of him. He's a very sweet, very dear person, and a very bright, intelligent person. Loved music, and his favorite was Carmina Burana. He used to love to play Carmina Burana. And
that's an
orchestral work. It's a very famous I can't recollect the composer right now, but it's a very famous orchestral quiet choral work, Carmina Burana. It's almost like that da 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 da, da. You know, that thing that you hear in all these movies.
Yeah.
And he was just very nice, very kind, and had a lovely time with him. We were very good friends. And then I watched him slowly descend into his own thoughts when I was in New York and he was in New York. That's another whole story.
Sure. Where did he play this music on? Did he play a musical instrument or something?
No, stereo, just on a stereo.
Oh, on stereo. So you used to listen to that together.
In the apartment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you used to listen to that together. That's great. So was this in New York that you went out with him, or in California?
In L.A., but in New York, it was more like we were more friends than going out. When in L.A., it was more romantic. But once, you know, we sort of broke up, and then I moved to New York, he moved to New York. I don't know who moved there first, but then mm-hmm. we got together as friends.
Did you ever meet his family?
Never. And I always wanted to. I was always very curious. I knew he had a mother and father in the South,
And
that's all I knew. He didn't talk much about them. I had the impression that he was a little bit of a rebel when it came to them, because they were very conservative and he was not.
Did you know him when he was on Dark Shadows?
Yeah, for a period of time. He loved it. He loved that show. He loved being on the show. And I remember when he went off the show, he was very upset.
Mm-hmm.
He was very upset that he lost Dark Shadows. But he loved being on it. It was sort of like heaven to him, you know.
Did he ever take you to visit the studio by any chance?
No, I was always working at NBC myself. I was always busy working in another studio, you know.
Sure. Did you ever do soap operas yourself?
Yes, years ago. I mean, when I was in New York, I was trying to get acting roles. I did a little bit part things, but nothing significant.
I understand.
So I was one of those dancers that wants to be an actress and kind of move up the caste system. Didn't work.
Well, you win 95%. Not for me. You know.
It worked for a lot of friends of mine. It didn't work for me. So I moved on to writing.
Good for you. Probably did a lot more there. Did you know Don? Did you keep in touch with Don in the later years when he was living in the South? Yeah. And no.
Once I talked to him on the phone very briefly. We had another mutual friend, another actress, say Barbara Anderson, and she, I think, kept in touch with him.
I remember that name. Sure.
Yeah, it was. She worked on Perry Mason. She was regular on that, and I know Roger worked with her a lot. But Barbara, I think Barbara talked to him from his parents' house one time, and then she told me about it. But you know, through the years, she and I have sort of kind of kept up on how's Don. You know, how's he doing? How's he mm-hmm. doing? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Roger, I'm gonna get now. I'm getting back to you. Can you hear me? Oh, you can. I can't. I don't hear you. Wait a minute. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? The phone. No, I can't hear your voice. I can't hear your voice. So I'm going to call. So I am going to. So now we're going to get back to Roger. And Roger is going to tell us about how he met Don and the circumstances behind that, because that goes back a long way, doesn't it, Rog?
Yes, it goes back. It goes back to, you need to understand something. I think that Don and I met the very first day that I came to Columbia. It was called Freshman Day. And, before I say any of this, I just want to tell you that I was fascinated hearing Sean talk about Don, because it solidified in my mind something I thought about Don. Don was the incarnate ladies' man. I think that he was just one of those guys who found it really easy to be in the company of beautiful ladies.
Well, he would just know himself. He would just know yes. how to be himself. Very genuine and yeah. very sweet. And people liked him and he knew it. So, but it never felt like manipulation. He was never a manipulator.
No, he was not, he had no gall. He had no sense
arrogance?
He was not remotely Machiavellian. He was not self-centered in a you know, obvious actor way. He just wasn't. He was
right.
I thought always that Don was rather scholarly.
Yeah.
And that he was also the incarnate gentleman. He was
yes.
so kind and considerate. He never
yeah.
interrupted people. All the things that I do.
You heard it here.
Yeah, there's some. But I forgot to mention. You mentioned the scholarly, Roger, and Don would quote poems. He'd quote Emily Dickinson, he'd quote Shakespeare, and it would just come out of nowhere. Do you remember that?
Yes.
It was amazing. I was always very impressed.
I understand that. I have to tell you that that comes a little with the territory of going to Columbia to college.
Yes.
Because at the drop of a hat, I can tend to wax rather poetic myself.
Don't do it now.
And I understand that.
Don't do it now.
Don't do it now.
Do it now?
No. Don't do it now. We're talking about Don.
No, I'm not. I'm going to tell you, though, that Don was always a guy who, one, took acting seriously, really seriously. He was the kind of actor who did his homework, never, ever had to look at the teleprompter, knew everybody else's lines as well as his. He was, he had discovered what the scene was about, and he would play he would play it out naturally. He never anticipated, nor did he show you what he was doing. He just did it. I thought he had a remarkable quality from the very first time that I saw him do a big role, which was playing a 3.5-hour lead in Edward II at Columbia.
Wow.
And he was so serious. I played a knight named Arundel who had two scenes. And in one of those scenes, I brought in the head of Mortimer. And of course, I dropped Mortimer, and Mortimer's head was a big head of lettuce. And I couldn't resist laughing hysterically. And it really put Don off.
Sure.
We had to start over. And he was very patient, but he obviously didn't like it. So the next time, I kept the cabbage covered. I was right there with the lines. And I respected the fact that Don was indeed a focused actor who was, he wasn't out there on a smile and a shoe shine. Don was,
right.
He really cared about the work, and it wouldn't matter whether he was playing Edward II or the werewolf on Dark Shadows. He was the same guy. He played that part to the hilt.
Yep.
And he knew when to stop short. He was not a phony person and not a phony actor.
You know,
so yeah. how we met was, remember, I was from the South, and there weren't that many people at Columbia who were from the South. If you were from the South, you'd get around to the kids who were what were called geographical distribution kids. Now, the difference in Don and me was that Don had a full scholarship to Columbia. I know that when Don got to Columbia, he had already read the Lake Poets and the Greeks. He had read from Beowulf to Santayana. He had a real background, so that the difference between Don and me was I was always playing catch up scholastically, because I think the heaviest thing I ever read in high school was probably The Scarlet Letter. That'll give you a sense of Don was coming off reading the Lake Poets and the Greeks, and I probably read the book I just alluded to, and maybe, Huck Finn. I'm really trying to think on the books that I loved when I was in high school, but I wasn't. Look, when I got to Columbia and I looked up around the frieze on the library, it said Demosthenes and Euripides and Aristophanes. And I remember I was walking one day with Don, and I said, Don, you know, there must have been a lot of Greeks go here. And Don just looked at me like I was absolutely crazy. And he said, you've never read any of these people? And I said, no, I haven't read any of these people. They're writers? You're kidding. And then, of course, I started studying, and I got to understand who they were. But Don already knew who they were. That was the value of having an education from the Phillips Exeter Academy, yep, rather than Castle Heights Military Academy, 30 miles northeast of Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, that's for sure. I want to tell you something, by the way, Roger, that I happened to catch when I was looking at the old Dark Shadows tapes. And it had to do with a scene where you played a character by the name of Ned Stewart, which wasn't, of course, the best character you ever liked, and I understand that. And he was Chris Jennings, the werewolf. And the two characters did not get along with each other because the sister of the Ned Stewart character was a gal by the name of Sabrina, was Chris Jennings' ex-girlfriend who saw him turn into a werewolf and her hair turned white overnight and she wound up in a wheelchair. So the brother Ned Stewart really had it in for the Chris Jennings character. So there was a confrontation scene between your character and his character in the Collinwood drawing room, and the camera stayed just a little too late as the scene ended. And it didn't intend to catch this, but you know, the two of you were almost coming to blows with each other. Yeah, you know, he had his hand around your shirt and you had your hand around his shirt. And then the scene ended and the camera caught the two of you then going out of character for just a couple of seconds. And you started talking to each other. And I thought that was marvelous because it was almost kind of like I was looking at an acting school portrayal. And the two of you were talking to each other like, now, how did we handle this scene? And that kind of thing. And I could almost read the lips of him coming off. And that's what happens sometimes when, of course, Dark Shadows didn't have the money to take out these outtakes. But it showed me at that particular point the actual a little few second glimpse into the actual respect that the both of you had for each other as actors. Now, you probably don't remember this scene, but I
can tell you what I probably was saying to Don. Mm-hmm. I had a tendency when I grab somebody to really grab them. And sometimes I would go a little overboard. And I probably was saying, I hope I didn't go too overboard, Don. And Don was probably saying, nah, it's okay.
Yeah. But it was still respect. And that's what I saw. It was very professional. It was very professional.
I played lots of characters on Dark Shadows.
Right.
I didn't play just one or two. I played
six or seven.
At least seven.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would lose track of I couldn't remember. Know that I could stay focused on the character that I was playing,
right,
but it was, I had a lot of those scenes where Don, I don't think Don had these kinds of scenes. You can tell me. I don't remember. But I had a lot of scenes where I was, in fact, Jeff Clark, but I was really Peter Bradford.
Right.
And I had so many people telling me, you're not Jeff Clark, you're Peter Bradford. And I'm going, who's Peter Bradford?
He didn't have that. No, he played one character,
yeah.
except when he was Tom Jennings, the vampire, and Chris Jennings, the werewolf, there was a little bit of a segue, the twin brothers, and there was a little bit of a segue where one was killed off and the other one came on, so to speak. And so there was actually one episode where he played both characters. Don played both the vampire and the werewolf together, but that was only once. Nothing like what you did on a much longer term basis. But what he did in terms of the characters he played, it was, I mean, I'm just speaking from the standpoint of a fan, who remembers and of course has delved into the show for the trivial aspect, for the podcast, but he was flawless. I haven't heard a blooper yet from the guy, and I'm already into the 1897 segment where he portrays a teacher by the name of Tim Shaw, and you portrayed Dirk Wilkins, and of course Dirk Wilkins is one of your more favorite characters. But my point is, I haven't seen one blooper yet with Don. He was flawless.
Yeah. Don had he had a sense of purpose. He was very serious. One of the things that allowed me to have fun with things was that I was not quite as serious as Don.
Right.
But I'm not sure that I can't say that was a particularly good trait.
Sean, I want to get back to you. What were the you've talked about the more endearing qualities that Don had, but of course everybody has their positives and negatives, and people turn negatives into positives and so forth. In your thinking back as to when you knew him, did you think there was anything about him that not so much turned you off, but, you know, did you feel that maybe he was a little too serious sometimes about his work? Like Roger points out that, you know, Roger took more of a jocular attitude or a jovial attitude towards it. Was he an introspective person, or, you know, or was he? I understand he was a little bit of an introvert, but perhaps you can correct me on that because you're the one that knew him. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, he was very serious about his acting, and it hurt him a lot if he wouldn't get a part or if he'd lose a part. And he was introspective. But acting was everything to him, as far as I know. I mean, it was nothing else, really, at that point, except, you know, reading and music. He was very into reading and music. But acting, it was a passion. And it was, Roger said it, a sense of purpose. And he had it no matter how big, no matter how small the part. And he felt things very deeply. He was a Pisces. So he felt things very deeply, and he didn't take rejection very well. Mm-hmm. He felt kind of righteous about it, you know. And, you know, I wish I knew then what I know now about righteousness and failure and all that, because it really got to him. And I'm trying to think what else you were saying that struck a chord.
Well, you mentioned Pisces. Now, Pisces tend to be dreamers if you want to look into the astrological aspect of that. Did he have this dreamlike quality about him where, or was he more grounded or was he able to balance both?
I think he balanced both and still until he started losing his mentality. Because, you know, he started fantasizing about things, people, places, things that weren't true. So he had a big interior love about, you know, like that. So he imagined things that weren't there. Yeah. And I'm sure you know that. And that was very sad, very tragic about him. Well, but, No, go ahead.
We're actually going to go into that a little now. Roger, you were very, very close to him at a time in his life when he really did need somebody. And you were probably, from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were probably one of the best friends, if not one of the better friends he had when he was going through the trials and tribulations. Can you talk about that a little to the best of your recollection?
Look, I grew up in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and Lebanon, Tennessee, with my other side of my life in Louisville, Kentucky, Dad got very successful, and we had a great life in Louisville, and we had a farm in Bowling Green, and then I could afford to go away to a school, but I traveled all around the South to Memphis, to Chattanooga, to Suwanee, Tennessee. I knew what Don's parents were like. I met them. I took Don once to the New York Athletic Club, and we played basketball with his mother and dad the basketball court up on the 10th floor, and he really got a kick out of it because I took the time to spend with his parents doing something that was totally different. You know, Don was pretty much of a natural athlete. He could play basketball. Man, I was lucky if I could barely dribble.
You were like me.
I used to pretend that I was an athlete. People would ask me, they'd say, "What do you do when you're not acting?" And I go, I like tennis and I enjoy polo.
Oh God.
But the truth of the matter was that I had a much more looser kind of country, simple, easygoing, yet at the same time, I grew up watching English movies. I loved Dick Wool Suits, and I loved Alec Guinness and Terry Thomas, mm-hmm. and Alastair Sim. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. I had a fantasy life that allowed me to pretend a lot. I never saw that in Don. Don was very pragmatic. Don was. I don't know. Listen, looking back, I wish that I had taken the time to say, "Don, we can." See, I didn't take drugs. I didn't care anything about them. I didn't like pot. I didn't like any of that stuff. But I respected and left people alone who did, because generationally at that particular time, everybody did it. But I didn't bother to try to stop them, because it was not the thing to do. The thing to do is let people do their own thing.
I remember.
So yeah. It wasn't until I was doing the Dark Shadows movie and I got a call. Dan Curtis came to me on the set, took me aside, and he said, "You got to go back to the studio. Your friend has locked himself in the dressing room, and I don't know what's really wrong, but he's got some scenes to do, and we got to get him out of the dressing room, that's for sure." So I took the limo. It took about an hour to get back. I went upstairs to the, you know, he was locked in the dressing room, and I said, "Don, it's Roger, and I've got to talk to you." He goes, "Aren't you in the movie? Why aren't you out there in Tarrytown?" And I said, "Because I got to, Dan wanted me to come back here and see what the hell's going on. Now open up the door so we can talk about it." Well, he opened up the door, and he actually was pretty normal with me. He just said, "They're talking about me." I go, "Who's talking about you?" He said, "The stagehands. And it's reaching a point where I don't want to be down there. I don't want to be privy to it." And I go, "What are they saying, Don?" And he said, "I think they think that I'm not straight." Well, Don, you know that that's totally untrue. That, I mean, what do these guys know? I don't know. Why would that even bother you? Let's go down there and see if that, you know, you gotta do these scenes. So we'll go downstairs. So we went down, and he did the scenes, you know, and I said, "Well, that's great, God, and don't pay any attention to anybody." And but now look, I had to go back up to the set, okay? So I didn't go home with Don. I didn't walk him home or talk to him afterwards. I had done what I was supposed to do, which was get him to do the scenes. And I wasn't trying to con him or anything like that. I just said, "Who cares what any of these people think here? I mean, look at me, Don. I function here. I don't think about anybody and what they think about me. And they probably think a lot worse of me than they do of you. Because I probably give them reason. Because I kid around a lot." And I did. And I had a relationship with Dan Curtis, which could make a lot of actors not particularly like me, because I was kind of, you know, he sort of got a kick out of me and I could get away with stuff. But I never thought that Don, he didn't laugh and have fun and throw things away. He took them inside. He internalized them. And he thought about them, and he would let something go on up in his head, marinate up in his head, and do bad things to him. And it wasn't, look, Don came out to the West Coast pretty much when I did, right after, right? But he did, no, he didn't come out for 2 years, because I know that he got a master's degree at Columbia when I went out to go to UCLA. And I think Don was astounded that I got a series of Warner Brothers. Absolutely astounded. And he thought, if Roger got one, I can get one. So as soon as he finished graduate school, he came out to California. But I have to tell you, if he had asked me, I would have said stay in New York, because he had a really good agent. And he, because I was going to go back to New York. About 4 years later, I went back to New York to try to become more, taken more seriously. But Don was taken seriously. Don was, had a good reputation in New York, but couldn't wait to get to the West Coast. I don't know what he did. Sean was telling me he did a Dream of Jeannie. That's a very lightweight show. Okay. I think when he was doing an I Dream of Jeannie, I was doing a Twilight Zone, and I had the lead on the thing, and I got a lot of opportunities that I got because of being a good type. A good type, okay? The you know, the blonde haired, blue eyed
Sean, can I cut in?
Sean, I'm sorry, Roger. Sean, you wanted to say something?
I want to cut in. Because, you know, it was very clear that their paths, their career paths were divergent. You know, Roger was going up, 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 getting all this great work and these series and everything. And Don didn't. You know, he had Dark Shadows and that was pretty much it. But you know what? And I had never said this to you, Roger, but I never, ever saw Don jealous of you. I never saw him resent anything, all of your success. And, you know, a lesser person really could have and would have, but he never did.
That's true.
He just, and that says a lot about your friendship.
And in like turn, I promise you, I wanted Don to have success. I really wanted him to have a career. It bothered me because I think that he was, in fact, his own worst enemy. Little brother wanted to be an actor. I got him a part in a movie with me, and it was a damn cute part. And he came out to California, and he had a great look, and he went out on interviews, and one day he came to me and he said, "You know, Roger, I can't take the rejection. I don't know how you do it. Boy, people can say no to you and you take it like yes." I never thought anything about all the part of the business that you got used to quickly was saying no, you didn't get it. And things would go the wrong way or whatever, but I didn't take rejection to heart. And I think that was key to Don having a very difficult time. Because if rejection bothers you,
then it hurt him, right?
It's so hard to do this. You've got to be very thick-skinned.
That's right.
And I noticed that, and I especially noticed that the bigger star that you got to be, and there was something about Don that was not able to accept that completely. He internalized his rejections, but he was not, as Sean says, he was not a jealous type guy. We were always friends. And even in the end, when he went back to Memphis, I was building a hotel in Louisville, Kentucky, and I got a call from Don, and he wanted to come up and work at the hotel. He said, there's got to be something I could do. And I thought, you know, maybe not a bad idea. And his dad got on the phone. And I don't know how he got the phone away from Don. But and Don didn't seem to say anything. And his dad said, you know, Don's not, he's not the Don you knew, Roger. He's, oh. Things have changed a lot. And I said, well, you don't think he's capable of coming up here? No, I really don't. And I don't think that it would be good for Don. And I think you have a lot of pressure opening the hotel. And I'm thinking that it would not be a good idea. Now, did I know as much as I should have known? My friend Dorsey Walter, who was a mutual friend of ours, and Don lived over in Dorsey, had a building at 60th, right off the 59th Street Bridge. And Sean, I think he was living over there at some point when you were seeing him, right?
Yeah, I was there.
Now,
he started getting very paranoid.
Yeah.
And he wasn't one in the house, but when we were out in public and walking down the street, Second Avenue and all that, he just was becoming paranoid. And he'd create these things and the same kind of story. Oh, they're talking about me. He'd say about strangers, total strangers. So talking about me. Yeah. And it was very sad because he was so brilliant. He'd talk about the Greeks and philosophy and all that and turn right around and say they're talking about me. So it was like a strange mix, watching him kind of slide. And at one point he said, I've got to leave this city. I can't handle it anymore. And I guess that's when he went back to his parents' house. Now, I don't know if they came and fetched him, or if he went on his own. I lost track of that.
I think they came to New York. Don had a real, had some sort of an episode where he really kind of had a breakdown. And I think that, you know, at that particular point, I was getting married. I walked into an elevator once, and Don was talking to what was going to be my wife, Jacqueline Smith. He was trying to get a date with her, and he was doing a pretty darn good job. He had her laughing, and I walked onto the elevator, and I remember Don got called in for the interview. So once we got off the elevator, I got an extra few minutes with her, and that gave me a real advantage. And I also had a car, so I gave her a lift uptown. And what I recall is that Don must have done well because he stayed in the interview. He didn't come back out. And I don't think we were up for the same thing. So it was a big casting office. And so she went in, I went in, and I never saw Don. He may have come out and left. I don't know. But I did give her the ride uptown. And Don never acted like I pushed my way into that situation.
He sounds like a very unassuming guy.
I knew that Don, he had an eye for a good-looking girl. As we can see, Sean there is a good-looking girl, and she's, when I saw her the first time here about a week ago, I thought to myself, wow, Don knew a good-looking girl when he saw one, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Roger, you old flatterer, you.
No, it's true.
Black people get everywhere.
I'm going to add my voice to that.
I'm telling it like it is.
I'm going to add my voice to that, but I don't want to embarrass her. The point is that.
I should add this. I talked to Don's sister today, and I asked her what it was like when Don died. And she said that about 2 weeks before he died, he really had a breakdown. And his mother had died, his father had died, and they died fairly close together. And Don just one day looked at the house, looked at the furniture, was there alone, and he started taking the furniture out onto the lawn. And apparently he told the neighbors that he could come and take it, that he was going to sell the house. He was, you know, and they did take it. Most of the furniture of the house, Bonnie said, that got taken off the lawn. Don took it out and gave it away. And you could see that he really wanted to make a change, but in less than 10 days, he was going to be dead. Now, do I know whether Don got a diagnosis that something was, or felt something was going to happen? You know, I go to church a lot now, and I think that I spend more time trying to internalize and understand faith, and I think that Don Don went in and out of, you know, certainly where Don was pretty much trapped, and he had lost the anchors in his life, his mother and his dad.
Yeah.
And what could be more tragic than sitting there alone, and wanting just something different? And now, how much did he know as to how sick he was? I don't know. Bonnie mentioned that he had gained a good bit of weight and wasn't taking care of himself. But she also said that when he came back to Memphis in the beginning, he did several plays, and he did some big plays and got some really good reviews by the papers there in Memphis. Because let's face it, Don may have had problems, but he also had talent.
Yeah.
He had something that was his own. All he needed to do was leave himself alone. It's hard to do that sometimes. It's hard to leave yourself alone. And he wasn't able to do that very well.
Roger, it's funny that you mentioned, actually, apropos of your mentioning Bonnie. Apropos of your mentioning Bonnie, Don's surviving sister, at the end of this podcast, Bonnie has actually taped a little tribute that she wrote that she wanted the Dark Shadows fans to hear regarding a little bit of her personal reminiscences of Don and her thanks to the fans for being so interested in all these years, in his acting, in his portrayal, and their curiosity about Don Briscoe, the person, as well as the characters he played. And I do want to thank Roger for helping me set that up with Bonnie.
I do want to say one thing. When I heard Bonnie read this, I thought Bonnie has, you see in Bonnie a lot of Dawn. She's very, though, she's extremely well adjusted and has had to deal with the sadness of loving her brother so dearly and seeing this disintegration. It's very hard. It's very hard. And it's like, just remember, whatever Don did, he did well. I remember once going down a swimming pool and at Columbia. He told me, he said, "Come on down. I've got a diving." There was a competition for diving, and lo and behold, I go down there, and Don was a hell of a diver. Could have been a damned Olympic diver. What he did well. And so I think it's a very touching tribute to see his sister. They were very close, and I think she understood him very well. And I think the fans will get a great, great insight into Don and enjoy it very much.
I agree with you 110%, and it was a pleasure for me to talk with her, the little conversation I had with her. And so if you just stay with us, guys, right before the end of this broadcast, we are going to play that tribute that she recorded. She's a very private person, which was why she couldn't come on the podcast personally, but she did want to have the fans understand and know the gratitude that she felt, over, you know, that once again, that after all these years, he was still remembered. And
it needs to be mentioned, she's also a very religious person, as were his parents.
Okay, absolutely. And so you see that now we're also, in addition to that, if my boss in London is able to play it, after that little tape was done, she was at her granddaughter's house while this was being taped, and her granddaughter also knew Don as she was growing up. And the granddaughter had a couple of reminiscences to offer about Don, and that was right after Bonnie finished her tribute. So hopefully we'll be able to play, that's not that long, but we'll be able to play those for you also at the end of the podcast.
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. It was like eavesdropping on two people who knew Don really well.
That was really, the word is serendipitous, as they say in the academic circles, and in Brooklyn English, that's accidental. But it was great that after she did the speech, I agree with you, Raj, the granddaughter graciously volunteered a few of her thoughts about a couple of things to add to the perceptions and to add to the information that we give you tonight regarding Don. So before we end this marvelous tribute to him, may he rest in peace and may his memory be a blessing. And I hope he's listening from somewhere upstairs tonight, to both of you, regarding the memories that you have of him. Sean, do you want to say anything before we close?
I do. I think one of the tragedies of the Don Briscoe tragedy is that in modern day, the mental problems that he had could be addressed. Whereas when it was happening to him, in the 70s and 80s and then later on, there wasn't the help available. There wasn't the understanding available. because yes, as Roger mentioned, he did do drugs and he did LSD, but when he would be doing these drugs, he was solving the problems of the whole universe. You know, it was something that meant something to him, you know. And the tragedy is his brain couldn't handle it. But in modern times, there would have been help. And I think that's part of the sadness here, that he didn't really get the help that he needed to get himself on the straight and narrow. But what a wonderful person, and what a great mind. He had a great mind for logic and figuring things out. And he'd be the first to explain crazy, you know, things. He got a parking ticket, a moving violation once in his car, his little MG car. And he spent about 10 minutes explaining to me why he got the ticket and why it wasn't really fair. And his logic was, you can turn left if the cars aren't coming at you. But that's not true. You don't have the right of way. If there are cars, there are cars. And he would explain that. He'd say, well, that's what I told the policeman. I said, they weren't that close. And I thought I could just turn left here. That kind of thing. I'll never forget him going on about that. But in logic, he was right. And that's an interesting thing about his mind. He had such a logical, brilliant mind. But he could logic himself over to the other side, too.
Yep. Anyway, Roger, do you have anything? Do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I want to say that Don was an innocent. He was an innocent in a world that doesn't particularly, the world is, it's a tough place.
Especially now.
You've got to steel yourself up. You've got to keep moving. I've had so many things happen to me that look, you can't get this age and not be embarrassed by things you've done, tragically upset and can't believe that you acted like that. I'm sorry for, you'd like to be able to say that you apologize to all the people who you've in some way or other have offended, because not everybody can be like Don, because I don't think Don offended many people. I don't think he wasn't like that. And there are I got to know just a little bit now, okay? Steve McQueen, who had a way of offending everybody. He was an equal opportunity offender. And I think when McQueen died, Hollywood didn't care, because he had really offended a lot of people, because he was very self-involved and he didn't care. And it made him, also it made him what he was. I can't say that I've been able to do that, okay? Maybe it's growing up in the South. You can't. My mother used to say, you can take the boy out of Bowling Green, but you can't take the Bowling Green out of the boy. And I'll always have a little of that in me. And I think when you're from Memphis and you're from Chattanooga and you're from Bowling Green or Lebanon, Tennessee, or Louisville, Kentucky, you have some baggage that will always stay with you. I remember once writing a play for a very fine playwright in New York who wrote with George S. Kaufman, wrote the Solid Gold Cadillac that was a pretty, it had a long run on Broadway. And I wrote this play, and he read it, and he said, "Who are all these people?" And I said, "They're my family." He goes, "You're kidding." Because my family, unlike Don's family were very normal. My parents, my family, they were out there, boy. They were, they reminded me of, they were very Faulkner-esque. My mother read 2 to 4 books a day. Oh my father, really, he could read the sports page. He said, "I can get more business drunk than most guys get sober." And my dad stayed drunk for 35 years, a fifth a day for 35 years. And, but he was a character. He was very charming, and he made for a great character in a story. Don's parents were fine, provincial people who were normal. And, I guess one of the things that might have helped me as an actor was that I grew up around people who were, without knowing it, extremely theatrical. You know? Easy for me to find theatrics. Whereas Don created his own theatrics. He didn't grow up in a theatrical family. He grew up in a very conventional and provincial Christian family, whereas I didn't at all. My mother's favorite writers were Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Faulkner. Oh my God! You couldn't have had a group of people who loved these wildly, well, I don't have to tell you, but the Russian novels are so wild, and Mother just loved that. But at her roots, she grew up on a farm in Bowling Green, Kentucky. But I know that Don and I, while we were very, very different, but respected each other because we knew that we came from the same place. It was, I understood exactly where and how he grew up. I will always be sorry that when you have a life that hasn't reached all its potential, that hasn't gone as far as it could go, and I'm not saying that I went as far, you know, Don never got to marry, never got to have children. Man, I think of my family and how marvelous. Boy, I love being married. Certainly married enough times. And I had a great time every time.
He had a star-crossed life, Brodge. He had a star-crossed life. But he had a talent.
But not everything's perfect. Definitely. Not everything's perfect. I wasn't... Do you think that when I saw Midnight Cowboy, that I didn't want to play that wonderful part that John Voight got to do? Sure. But I still envied, while I envied the being able, I don't know if envy is the right word, because I just marvel at what a good actor John Voight was and how he was able to carry that off. I love watching, and I loved watching Don. I saw a scene. I told Sean about this scene, and you sent it to me, I think. And John is, I think Don's trying to beg his life from Barnabas.
Yeah,
keep
yeah.
Barnabas from killing him.
As Tom Jennings, and the second time
it's
for the fans.
It's a great scene.
Yep.
For anybody who watches Dark Shadows and wants to watch a wonderful moment, watch this scene.
As Tom Jennings and the sun's coming up, and he's begging Barnabas to spare his life, while Barnabas takes two candlesticks and turns them into a cross to keep him there. And Briss and Don, as Tom Jennings is literally pleading with him, spare me, spare me. I'll do anything for you. I'll do anything for you. And, it's tragic because the later part of his life did reflect a quiet, unspoken plea. And I'm sure if he met somebody that could have saved him and helped him the way Sean is talking about and could have done anything for him, then things might have turned out quite differently. And he passed away quite ironically on Halloween of 2004. And that really, really got to me. Yeah, that really, really got to me, October 31st. And but once again, we are celebrating the life that he lived, and we are celebrating the good things that he has done, and we are celebrating the things that over 30-some-odd years later, well, 2004, so almost 20 years later after his death, we're able to talk about him and reminisce and celebrate his memory. I want to thank both of you once again on behalf of Literary License Podcast. Roger, as usual, you do so much for us, and it is very much appreciated. And Sean, at the last minute, you came on and you gave us your memories and you graciously consented.
I really appreciate it, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you.
Pleasure, believe me.
The pleasure.
Thank you.
Pleasure is ours. This is Tom Diamond now signing off for Literary License Podcast. And we hope that the fans will, especially the Don Briscoe fans, but Dark Shadows fans, will remember Don's memory. And once again, may his memory be.
I guess you're planning on playing the piece with Bonnie.
We wouldn't forget it. And Roger would never forgive me if I didn't. This is coming on right after we sign off. So people stay on after we sign off, because then we're going to be playing Bonnie's piece, and hopefully as well as the
local newspaper winning the scholarship here, this prep school in New Hampshire. Don't know about that. I did know that about Shakespeare and that just being able to perform it. Yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, all his life.
Yeah.
Friends would gather around. He would just burst into a soliloquy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you used to feed lines to him.
Yeah, he'd come home for spring break, and he was going to go do summer stock and everything. We'd go over a script for him together. I'd feed another person's lines that he was going to say something next, you know.
That's awesome. So y'all did it together.
Mm-hmm. I was just a kid. I was 6 years younger than him. He left home when I was 10.
Wow.
To go for the scholarship. He was 16.
Wow.
He already skipped the second grade because he was so smart. And so he was just barely 16 when he went to prep school, 16 to 18, 2 years of prep school, and then to Columbia. So the prep school was his high school finishing. Didn't actually graduate from high school, graduated from the prep school.
I think it can truly be said that Don was born to perform. From an early age, he sought and usually captured the attention of almost everyone with whom he came in contact. Once he began acting in high school plays and received rave reviews for his performances, he set his mind to become a professional actor. An afternoon paper route with the Press-Senator, a local Memphis newspaper, led to winning a scholarship to Phillips Exeter Academy, a renowned prep school in New Hampshire, from the Scripps Howard Foundation. Don was intelligent and an avid reader. Perhaps that served to help him memorize all the lines an actor has to perform. He went on to win another scholarship at Columbia University, New York, all the while honing his acting skills with the Columbia Players and Summer Stock. He especially loved performing Shakespeare and was known throughout his life to burst into a soliloquy at a moment's notice and without apology. I have fond memories of feeding lines to him when he was home for a break or the holidays. His fame from Dark Shadows was something of a conundrum for him. It was just supposed to be a step along the path of becoming the next Laurence Olivier. Yet he appreciated his fans and would always stop and sign autographs at the studio door. In later years, when fan letters found their way to his home, he would send autograph photos back to them. Some fans even dropped by on occasion, and he was always gracious to receive them and talk with them. Don probably could have been anything he wanted to be. He chose to be an actor and had several years of success in that field. He did an off-Broadway play, a few TV roles, including Dark Shadows, a few TV commercials, and even a stint on the road show of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. At one point, he was considered for doing his role in the movie version, but George Siegel won out. Don seemed bent on experiencing to the max every activity that interested him. When that included drugs, it became his downfall. My personal belief is that the use of LSD damaged him permanently. It's sad that his burgeoning career came to a halt, but it's also a testament that even the best of people can make bad decisions. He was well enough at times to do a few local plays while living back home in Memphis, and that was fun for him, especially a performance in King Lear, which garnered a great review in the local paper for which he had once worked. I would like to assure his fans that he was loved and well cared for by his family. He enjoyed fame for a moment, but more importantly, he found the ultimate love and peace that he had sought all his life when he stepped into heaven.
The only way to get the true emotion.
I never knew some of that stuff about him.
I didn't want it to be rehearsed.
It's things people don't know. It's a real person who wanted something out of life but never found it until he found God. And when I before I wrote this, I prayed for God to be glorified in whatever I wrote. And then I heard back from Tom, and he was touched. I heard from Roger, and he was touched. This is a God thing. This is from God.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
So,
that is beautiful.
Thank you again, and good night from Literary License Podcast.
Window panes were eyes, I guess they would. that's what these walls would say. That's what these walls would say.